Hey guys, it's Doc from DLC. I'm fortunate enough to catch up with Richard Spinks today of Active Energy Group. Are you there, Richard?
Yeah, I'm there. Hi, Doc.
Hey. Okay, I've noted that there's been a fair bit of interest in your company of late. There's a bit of chatter out there in social media. People seem to have a lot of comment on the business, but rather than me talk too much, I thought it'd be a good opportunity for you to give us a bit of background of yourself, tell us a little bit about where you've come from, and where are you going at this point in time?
Okay, well, thanks for that. We'll try and keep it short. My background is I worked for the last 30 years in identifying undervalued assets in various sectors, in, generally speaking, in agricultural, forestry, fisheries originally, and bringing those undervalued assets together to create value and economic opportunity for the owners of those assets. Generally speaking, it's governments and communities around the world in places that are facing difficult economic situations. And that's the case today with where we operate, which makes it a really nice business sector to be working in, as it not only allows us to create economic value for the business, but also for those who are associated with it. We're basically split into two parts. One part is, and this is important, we have two parts to the business, one being the asset, if you like, the real asset-backed forestry side of the business that allows us to reconstitute assets, value them, and use those as a basis for funding for the second part, which is our production business, which involves us being able to utilize forestry assets and to turn them into what would otherwise be unusable would normally, turn it into something very valuable. Again, bringing better usage of the forestry that we manage and better economic value locally to the communities in which who live in those forestry areas, generally at the moment in Canada, and our focus being on Alberta and Newfoundland and Labrador right now.
Okay, so you've got a multifaceted business opportunity. You've got a pretty interesting and extensive background. You and I have chatted a little bit before we've gone live on this. So the business, the timber business out in Canada and Newfoundland, that's your core asset. That's where you see the business developing most.
Yeah, we're working with a significant number of forestry opportunities. But those are the two that we focus on most. And the reason being that in Alberta, they have a very significant percentage, and it's over 75% across northern Alberta, of hardwood, being aspen, which did traditionally have a use and did have some value, but today not so much. I'll give you some numbers to that. So, you know, the gross margin on a cubic meter of aspen in northern Alberta right now is about $4.70. It's not worthwhile the forestry guys going in and cutting that. Can't be used in sawmills. Generally goes to OSB, which is just a cheap fiberboard. They've had real issues over the last 10 years in marketing that, because since the 2008 financial crisis. The softwood in the same forest will yield them over $25 a cubic meter. So, of course, they do go in and cut that out. But that's only going to be 20% of the entire forested area. So that means that there's so much more material available in those forests that simply is not economically viable unless you have a technology like AEG does. And that's why that's so exciting. If you look to Newfoundland and Labrador, slightly different scenario. Once we get that up and running, it'll be absolutely a first for that province. First of all, it couldn't be closer to Europe in North America. And in fact, it's cheaper to ship a vessel from St. Anthony in Newfoundland and Labrador than it is to UK than it was to ship for us in our previous iteration, being wood chipped to Turkey from Ukraine. It's cheaper for vessels to go all the way across the Atlantic than it was to cross the small Black Sea. So the logistics argument there is very strong. The other thing is that for two of the three pulp mills that sustained the forestry industry of that province for over 100 years have now closed down about 8-9 years ago, and a lot of forestry jobs were lost, and a whole lot of exports were lost to that province. You know, we're able, because we use exactly the same type and quality of pulp wood out of those forests in Newfoundland and Labrador, we'll be able to actually produce something significantly more valuable than the saw log that they produce currently in that province, meaning that we turn it on its head. The pulp and the waste is worth more than what traditionally has been the high-value part of a tree. So for them, it's a really exciting opportunity, and for us too.
So you've now basically got a captive audience there of workers and of course resource, where you know you've got teams of people out there that want to go out there and cut wood, but it's just not viable for them to do so. You've now found purpose for those guys. You've now found a purpose that far supersedes the existing usage for that product. And in actual fact, economically, logistically, it's more rewarding to you as a company. Do you want to give us a little bit of insight to the size of this market? You know, how you see that market growing, and indeed, you know, how you can work in that space, and of course, what that will mean for Active Energy moving forward.
Well, first of all, the potential market is huge. It's far greater than any combination of suppliers from any number of markets, from all the markets in the world, the timberland and forestry markets in the world could ever satisfy. And that's because currently coal-fired power plants burn around 2 billion tonnes a year of coal globally. And everyone knows that coal is a bad thing. It's not good for people's health. It's not good for the environment. It's an old technology that's looking for ways to struggle to survive. And the beauty of our technology, by the way, is that we can actually uniquely replace up to 100% of the coal burned in a power station without any retrofit, meaning that coal-fired power station suddenly becomes a biomass, clean-burning power station overnight. And the volumes are so great that obviously we would never pretend to be able to satisfy even a tiny fraction of the number of power plants. So many will close, some will convert, a la Drax, and others will simply be retired. So there are trillions of dollars of stranded assets potentially in the market now, and people and all of those plants are looking for ways to survive or looking for government bailouts to close. And that happens every day nowadays. The amount of volume that we can produce is based purely on the amount of feedstock we can secure. Now, as I said earlier, we can look at low-value forestry residuals, forestry waste, poor quality trees. We love beetle kill. You know, we can help governments clear beetle kill or post-forest fire. Better still would be to work with them on we're talking to governments about working with them on fire management. So taking out a lot of the brush and the undergrowth and the smaller and weaker trees in forestries that they've no use for and no economic way to remove to avoid forest fires. We're looking here in Spain, for example. And the other amazing thing we can do is we can mix coal fines, which lie in vast... I know you're a little bit about your background, so you'll understand what a coal fine is and how they're left to lie in lagoons for decades, having been mined but being of the wrong size, being too fine to be used in or shipped around the world in the coal industry. Now, those materials have been mined already, and you can mix them perfectly well with our material. And we're looking at those opportunities as well, which is a really important thing because it gives us a force multiplier of our own assets, which means we can cut far less trees to produce far more material, still allowing power plants to meet their emissions requirements and continue operating, cleaning up the environment at the same time, whether it be at the coal fines end, which unfortunately create all kinds of havoc with waterways and aquifers and rivers across the world. We're already in discussions with all kinds of owners of those assets. When I say owners, they're not proud owners. You know, these cost them fortunes to clean up. So we're offering a solution which might help them to earn money with us to clean them up, which is a good thing. And then there are, in terms of size of the market is growing constantly. EU is the biggest market. Newfoundland and Labrador is the closest point, as I say, in North America with significant forestry assets to that market, and ironically, one of the only areas of the eastern North American continent that is not selling product into this huge market. And that's something that I think they recognise. And that's the reason why I think they're very excited to work with us.
It's absolutely fascinating. And I don't say that very often when I do these podcasts. It's absolutely fascinating to hear, you know, what appears at the surface, and I'm sure it's not, a really simple concept, and how you can deploy it and it actually be used, because we know that there's so many different, the criteria to clean up globally, but certainly in the UK, our markets here, and I'm sure across Europe, that's going to be a common theme. It's fascinating to hear how it can be done. I guess the question that I'm ask myself, and I guess you can give us an answer to this, is how much does it cost for these things to switch over from coal to a cleaner, more efficient, effective product like your own? And you know, what sort of cost is implied? Is there a catch here? Because it does seem like it's one of those concepts which really is going to get some legs if it can be A, sustainable, which we know it is, because you can regrow trees. There's going to be forests around the world that have similar situations. So you've got huge captive target audiences that you can go to. But I mean, what is the cost implications for a company to transfer over to this product? And in actual fact, what sort of upside, I'm sure you've done the numbers and the figures, what sort of upside is there to AEG?
That's the most important question. So the widely accepted number, and there will be people who give you one a bit lower or a bit higher or a lot higher in some locations, is around $700,000 per megawatt of installed capacity of a coal plant. Now, you can Google all kinds of coal plants, but let me tell you, in Europe, generally speaking, they won't run much smaller than 200 megawatt, and they'll generally be average out at about 400 megawatt of installed capacity per plant. So you multiply 400 by $700,000. That's what it is likely to cost a company to convert to away from coal and into biomass. If they're using the ubiquitous wood chip or pellet, white pellet products, we're not anything like those two. Okay, we're far superior in all of our specifications. And so, with our product, you don't spend any of that. So when you ask me what's the upside to us, it's more like what's the upside to the buyer who wishes to not spend, let's say, 400 times $700,000 and close his plant for a year or two while he's doing that, and a lot of that money goes into the handling, the storage, the supply chain. We don't change a single thing. We act just like coal. We look like coal. We grind like coal and we burn like coal. And we are, and again, the density of our product over the product that's widely accepted and used in approximately 30 million tonnes in the EU this year is anticipated, being white pellet, we need two ships for every one of their three to move the same amount of bulk density across the ocean, and we need 40% less. Sorry, I take that back. We need 30%. We give 30% more energy per tonne than their products, so actually you're halving the number of ship trips that need to be made across the ocean, again in helping the environment by having less emissions in the supply chain. So we really have something very exciting. It saves a lot of money to anybody burning coal who wishes to change over to a biomass product.
Let me get this right. It's cheaper to ship. It's more efficient to use. You can use it on a like-for-like basis, you know.
Yep.
It's more efficient in the environment. So, you know, why don't you have hundreds of millions of dollars worth of orders right now? What's holding you back? Because it seems to me that, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer when you look at I don't own any shares in your company, right? So I've got absolutely no motivation to make that suggestion, but. You know, it seems a bit of a no-brainer that companies are quickly going to adopt this product. You know, you've got the product there; it's up and running. I mean, I've got that right. Is that my layman interpretation?
I think you're jumping the gun a little bit. So, in 2 weeks' time, we have a week of demonstrations of our first commercial plant, which is based in Salt Lake City in Utah. And we have coal companies, we have government representatives, we have forestry companies, we have sawmilling companies, big ones. I'm talking some of the biggest in the world. All very excited to see what we can do with sawmill waste, what we can do with forestry residuals, how they can increase the underlying value of their real assets by getting a better DCF value. I mean, forests are valued basically on DCF valuations. So if you're, as I said earlier, if your hardwood's going out at $4.75 a cubic and I can put a machine on your forestry and that forestry will then suddenly be producing $20+ per cubic for your otherwise almost worthless hardwood material. For example, if we talk about Alberta or the boreal forests, in fact, of Canada, across the whole country, suddenly you realise that people are interested in this technology. Why don't we have hundreds of millions of dollars of orders? Well, okay, I'm not going to answer that question because it would lead. I'd have to make a comment that I don't want to make right now. But we have huge interest. Now, the only issue you have is you must have the feedstock to put in the front end to get the product at the back end. Now, who has that? Governments have that. Forestry owners have that. TIMOs, Timberland Investment Management Organizations, have that. Big timberland owners have that. Huge sawmill operations have that. Anyone who has wood waste, if we look at Vancouver, for example, we know of locations where they have tens of millions of tons of something called salty hog. Salty hog cannot be used for anything. It's an absolute nightmare for the environment. And the government in BC have been looking for decades at ways to clean up salty hog. It's all of the rubbish that comes off of the outside of logs that have been floated in seawater before they get processed in pulp and paper mills and sawmills in Western Canada. Our technology cleans that right up and turns it into the same high-value fuel that can go all over the world. For example, on the West Coast, it'd probably go to Japan, right? The fastest growing market currently in the renewable energy sets for biomass, but with the highest prices. So all of those things are going on. We have great, very strong support from financial institutions in the US who have been following us for 3 years, have been working with us through this process, and we're very excited that we're certain that we're going to be able to build a significant number of plants. I won't give you any numbers today. But the answer is that this is a very new technology. It's taken some years to develop. We've had to do it as a very small cap company. We've really worked hard to squeeze every penny we can into it. We've got to the point where we've proven it. And in fact, our first offtake will start being delivered in February from that plant in Salt Lake City. And whilst you can look online and see who that client may be, we don't speak about our customers on the coal side because they, understandably, their coal suppliers get nervous and it causes them lots of phone calls. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, we are now gearing up to produce a significant volume of material out of North America in the coming 12 months. We have also been developing relationships in Asia because they're closer to the Japanese markets, and also because we're the only technology in the world so far that the palm plantations across Indonesia, Malaysia, and other countries, which have a huge deforestation and environmental issue with their palm forest, palm plantation, their palm waste. The reason for that, briefly, is that the wood that we see in Canada has 200 parts per million of potassium, and palm has 15,000 parts per million. No other technology has been able to remove that potassium, which makes it unusable as a fuel. So it's burnt on the ground and creates fog and smog, rather, in China. It's that bad.
What they do is they extract
the volumes there. We can make the volume. So we've got the volume of feedstock. We can make the volumes of finished product. And the feedstock exists, and that's why we have two parts of our business. One part looks for feedstock. One part processes it and increases its value.
So on that note, the guys out there, the palm oil producers who are sort of deforesting, extracting the palm oil, I've got all of this waste. It's a messy sort of dirty sort of waste that nobody can do anything with. You're suggesting that you can actually use that on the same terms for the same purpose, yeah?
I'm not suggesting it. I mean, we've actually been testing it now for over a year, and if there's any palm producers listening to this, they've probably met us.
Right, got you. Okay, no, again, it's something that I wasn't aware of. I'm aware of the destruction or the destructive nature of that industry. the fact that you can come in there and help clean that up as well, it's impressive.
Yeah, and it also not only removes the problem, but it creates economic opportunity and profit. So it's, you know, it's all things to all men in that respect. So it's really quite exciting.
So Richard, for any of the critics out there who say, oh, it's just another one, it's just another sort of maverick out there with a great idea, looks good on paper, but, you know, really isn't getting there. You know, what do you say to those people? I mean, naturally, for me, it sounds like it's a great opportunity. You've certainly opened my mind to this, and having worked a little bit in power in my background, it's certainly I can sense the great leap of faith that might well be unfolding here. But what do you say to people out there who say, well, if it's such a good idea, why is it not trading at 5 or 10 times the multiple today? Why are the institutions not looking to, you know, make him a big offer and shift him out the way and take this idea forward themselves? What do you say to people with that comment?
Well, first of all, we've always been a very tightly held stock. Okay, so it's been pretty difficult in the early days, the last 3 years, certainly. Recently, you'll see bigger volumes going through, but generally speaking, it's been very hard for anyone to get any stock. Okay, first of all. And that's now changed with a number of small fundraisers that we've done over the past 18 months, 2 years. So a little bit more, there's been a little bit more free flow. But and that's purely talking about why it might be trading at this level. There's been some sellers in the market. Won't go into any detail on that, but everyone's aware of it. I mean, that's what the chat's all about at the moment. Who are they and everything else, you know. But I'm not here to discuss that. But there have been some, and that's nothing to do with them being knowledgeable about our business or having information that might lead them to sell. I mean, frankly, quite the opposite. And they're, you know, we're quite comfortable with that situation. In terms of institutions having interest in our business, I've said already that we have significant funds who have been supportive of us for 3 years and worked through this whole process with us, including extensive due diligence. So don't be surprised if, you know, we're not concerned about being able to build significant numbers of plants. That's not an issue. It's all been about getting this technology over the line. And over the line, as you'll know, coal plants don't just put anything in their boiler. You know, they don't play with these assets. These are billion-plus-dollar assets, these power plants. That's what they cost to build. And the last thing they're going to do, if they don't have to, is put something new in a boiler. Well, the fact that we're delivering our first material to a very large power plant in Utah in February for just that purpose, backed up with all kinds of 2.5 years of testing at the University of Utah in their burn labs and their ball milling processing testing labs and so on, tells you that we're on the verge now of actually being able to supply this to full-scale power plants, subject to volume being available. And our job now in this year is to build sufficient scale in our business. And the beauty of our system is that it's modular. So we know we can build these things very quickly and we can increase the volume from any given site very quickly. And far more cheaply, actually, than a white pellet plant would cost to build for an equivalent output. And don't forget, we're denser and we've got more energy per ton of output. So we're in great shape. It means that we'll start to see revenues. And when we see revenues, we'd expect our, you know, our stock price to increase. But the value of our business as well, don't forget, is in two places. One, we have this amazing technology. And we have this know-how and this IP, and we understand how to do it. And guess what? Nobody else has managed to do it. You'd have thought that the entire palm industry, and with national government support, would have figured out how to clean up potassium in palm waste. We did. They didn't. The second thing you'll see, you've got to look at, is the real asset value as we move forward into becoming more and more involved with ever larger forestry areas, which is not reflected in any way on our balance sheet. So if we figure out a way to get that on our balance sheet, that also might see some really interesting movement in terms of the valuation of our stock. But arguably, the market sets the price, and we're confident that that should be reflected as things progress in the coming 12 months.
It's a fascinating story. That's Richard Spinks, CEO of Active Energy Group. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.